I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, January 28th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off cell phones. Committee members present, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Rauscher, Senator Dunbar, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Chair Giesel. I believe Senator Klayman will be along shortly. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Renzo, who are taking the minutes and helping us out with the audio. So, we are continuing the subject of the natural gas pipeline. And so we are today going to talk with the Department of Transportation and the impact of the gas pipeline on our transportation infrastructure. So I will welcome Commissioner Ryan Anderson to the table. And do you have support staff with you, Commissioner?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Giesel. With me today is Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith, and as well as Andy Mills, our legislative liaison.
Very good. All right. Well, welcome. I'll let you introduce yourself to the committee. I don't know that we've had transportation before the Resources Committee before, so this is a new one for us.
Okay, well, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I am the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. It's great to be in front of this committee today. Yeah, because transportation, oh man, yeah, we've been involved in a lot of resource issues across the state and development and whatnot. So hopefully today, you know, we've put together some slides. We did have a session with the LNG caucus this past summer. So some of these are similar, but we've updated them to really give this committee the latest and greatest about how we're approaching the potential of an Alaska gas line.
Great. Commissioner, you have two staff online also. Lauren Little is the chief engineer. Daniel Smith is MSVC director. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Yes. Online, Lauren Little is our chief engineer. She's in charge of kind of the standards across the state. We also, you know, our folks also serve multiple functions. Right now, she's also acting as the Northern Region director. And then Mr. Smith, he's the measurement standards and commercial vehicle compliance. And so that's when we get into the operations of our, you know, our trucks and vehicles on the highways.
Very good. Well, I'll let you begin your presentation.
Okay.
If we could stop after each slide just to make sure committee members don't have questions.
Sure. Absolutely. So we'll begin with really the Alaska LNG transportation corridor and what's at stake for Alaska. You know, one thing I always think about with transportation, and when we think about how Alaska was built, it's really these significant events are what built Alaska. When you think about the gold rush and how many of our highways, you know, got the first try in there that then built into, you know, bigger highways. World War II, of course, that was the Elkan. That was another big push for Alaska. And then TAP, so the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That was the next big push when we built the Dalton. That was our significant road project as well as bridges there. For some years, I ran the Northern Region Circuit, which was the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Corridor. And that was, you know, the Dalton, the Elliott, and then as you go south on the Richardson. That was always something that we took a lot of pride in to make sure that infrastructure was always in good shape, you know, so that we're supporting that important piece of infrastructure that, you know, really feeds the state of Alaska on our budgets and whatnot. This proposal is a bit different. And what this slide shows is really the routing of the AKLNG line. And what it is, you know, it starts at Prudhoe Bay. It follows the Dalton Highway down to a place, you know, called Livengood, which is the start of the Elliott Highway. But then it goes cross-country. So it doesn't follow the Elliott Highway. It doesn't go through Fairbanks. It comes back on our highway system near Nenana, Alaska. And then from there, it will, you know, go along the Parks Highway until it gets down to about mile 133, which is near a big bridge, Chulitna River Bridge. And then south of there, then it goes across over to that kind of overland again until it goes, you know, under Cook Inlet. And so when we're looking at it, you know, we're really focused on those areas. The types of activities are important. So there's, of course, all the hauling and the trucking activities, the commercial vehicle activities. But then when you're along the Dalton and the Parks, there will also be areas where the pipeline goes underneath those highways. And so there'll be actual construction. I mean, we'll treat it like a construction project on our highway system. So that's a big part of what, you know, we're looking at. As we go along through here, you know, we'll talk about a lot of things, but, you know, material sites, access, you know, to our highway system, those types of things. You know, we've been in contact. We've been talking to Glenn Farn about those things to get a sense of, you know, how they're looking at things.
Commissioner, you show a marine route on here. Is this on the chances that there will be offshore export of the gas? Why is the marine route on there?
Yeah, Chair Kiesel. Yeah, we're trying to show kind of that bigger picture of, I mean, logistics and transportation. You know, we have heard there are opportunities where you can barge all the way to Prudhoe Bay. And so there could be a component of this where, you know, there's materials going to Prudhoe Bay. It's a very short window that you can do that. And so I don't think we expect, the majority of it, but, you know, we did want to show that. I would also like to say one of the things we were proud of accomplishing over the past few years was establishing that marine route. That actually wasn't a route. It's called the Maritime Administration. And they've had routes in Southeast Alaska that kind of stretch through Anchorage. When you get this designation, it allows federal funds, certain types of funds, to be invested in our port infrastructure. And so by us being able to go to MARAD and make this application and get that designated, all of those communities, these actually extend, you don't see it here, but several of these routes extend up the rivers. That makes those ports eligible for a lot of federal funds.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I was just wondering. So, is there at all a possibility that any of the materials for the pipeline or the gas line will actually go by barge, or is that completely out the picture?
Yeah, through Chair Giesel, Senator Rauscher. You know, I haven't received any detailed logistical plans from that. I know a lot of different areas are being looked at, including rail. You know, bring them in through ship through various ports. But we are aware that, you know, a lot of industry will use the Prudhoe Bay. They will barge into Prudhoe Bay for certain modules and things that it makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I see no further questions.
For the record, my name is Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So despite the fact that we're in a very different regulatory environment than we were in the 70s when the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was constructed, there are certainly things that we can learn from that and how we have to operate as an organization in order to best support construction of the pipeline. When you see on the slide here, it's a high level, a bit more of a graphical representation of our department, but it really does capture how we operate as a teamed resource pool across all of the different aspects of what DOT does. This has developed over the years that we've been in these roles with DOT, but in this more agile framework, it will help to be able to adapt to the changing needs as we understand the constructability plans of 8-STAR. As this develops, we'll be able to, through a flexible structure, adapt to the needs. Some of the requirements of the LNG line, it certainly may be compounded by other concurrent development in the state. For example, construction of the BEAD, the broadband energy infrastructure, and several other larger scale construction, which is going to task our workforce and our staff, whether it's through permitting or engineering reviews. So these are things that we're being mindful of and trying to establish task force and systems right now so that as we go forward over the next couple years that we're prepared. We look at our department from a couple different lenses. One is through strategic assets. These are things that we consider highly used infrastructure that provides this critical value back to the state, including our Alaska International Airport System in Fairbanks and Anchorage, our Alaska Marine Highway System, our Division of Facilities, Public Facilities, our statewide equipment fleet, and MSCVC measurement standards in commercial vehicle compliance. And that particular division is important because that's what's going to help ensure that the heavy traffic on our roads, heavy duty vehicles are compliant. Because as we do move forward with the increased use of our highways and other modes of transportation, the public safety, highway safety is going to remain paramount. And that is a role that the Department of Transportation does play both in constructing solutions to increase public safety, pullouts, for example, but then also the non-infrastructure related improvements, which we'll talk about a little bit about using digital tools such as Alaska 511 to help increase awareness of where activity is occurring. So with our cross-functional support, this is how our department is structured with a data modernization and innovation office, program management and administration, our new Alaska trails and local access systems to help provide support with rural project development and logistics. So these are examples of how we have different parts of the department which support our regions where you see project delivery and construction occur. With the development of the pipeline and as it gets underway, we are expecting thousands of heavy-duty trucks carrying these 80-foot-long pipe segments. These are going to be convoys, potentially overweight, oversized vehicles. And so this early planning will help us be able to accommodate the needs for construction, but keeping safety at the forefront.
Great. I see no questions. I'll let you go on.
One thing. Yeah, and for the record, Ryan Anderson, and just one thing about this structure, over time, DOT has responded to a lot of events over the past few years, the latest being Typhoon Heilong on the west coast of Alaska. And one thing we've learned is when there's an event, it really takes resources from across the state to respond the way Alaskans expect us to respond. And so as you see our structures and things, and when we get into the AKLNG line, it's an event. And so we want to treat it like that. So that's, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, thank you. And for the record, Catherine Keith. And that's a good point Commissioner Anderson brings up because it's not just resources within our own agency. It's other statewide departments and agencies and corporations as well. The Alaska Railroad Corporation, ADA, these groups we are coordinating with on a quite regular basis to help put the pieces together to best support the project as we move forward.
Oh, pardon me. Senator Klayman had a question.
Just a question, because I'm looking at the slide and it describes the northern, central, and south coast regions. And I know there's been a lot of press and a lot of discussion about consolidating DOT and not having the three separate regions. And specific to the pipeline, does that shift from having three regions and management in three regions, should we be concerned about not maintaining the three regions in terms of maintaining DOT facilities with a potentially large project like this?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Klayman. Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things we've been doing over the past year is really looking at, where we've had success and we've been listening a lot, like, for example, with several of the contracting organizations. Consistency in the way we operate is a theme for DOT, where, we've heard a lot about in one region, things are done a certain way, in another region they're done another way, and we really need to get, things consistent across the state, and technology accelerates that, because you have more ways to do that, and the communication tools are, people are communicating across the world now and in different ways. But with what we're looking at with our budget proposal, it's a leadership shift. The regions still stay intact. We're not bringing people, breaking things up there. It's really what we're trying to do is shift from regional directors in each region that would do all capital maintenance and operations, this full gamut, to having a maintenance and operations director that would look across the state at maintenance and just be dedicated to maintenance and operations, and then a capital program director that would be dedicated to capital across the state. But the construct of the regions, we have engineers that are, you know, in the regions that aren't really affected by this change. It's the leadership is what we're proposing.
Thank you.
So for the record, Catherine Keith. So as part of our lead up in understanding the cost, what it may take to shore up our infrastructure to withstand construction and all of the heavy truck usage, we've been evaluating our assets across the state. We do this already through our transportation asset management program. This allows us to collect all sorts of data on our national highway system bridges and our pavement condition. And through these measures, it allows us to understand if we are meeting our requirements. We are required to maintain our national highway system in a certain operating condition. And right now we do. Of course, some sections of road and some bridges, as we know, are better than others. So we're focused on, through this work, identifying what areas are most in need of improvements and looking at our next four-year project delivery plan, which you'll see coming up in our Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, our STIP, will be released for the public in the next couple weeks, and that'll show this four-year construction plan. So being able to look at the data with where our infrastructure is at, and then being able to incorporate those needs into our capital program will help both the developers and the public and decision makers look at where these investments are happening. And we through this public comment period that you'll see with our STIP, it'll help. We'll have a lot of opportunity for feedback and comment on that construction plan. So through that, I can talk briefly about the Dalton, because as most of you will know, with 414 miles, about 250 of them are gravel. And we have had a significant amount of construction activity since 2015 and 2025. We've had about $460 million invested in major construction projects. And then over the next 5 or 6 years, we're planning an additional 450 more. And it's certainly been seen in the recent years that there's high amounts of washouts on emergency erosion mitigation work that we have to do. So we're identifying potential ways that we could be more responsive when that does happen, so we don't have the Dalton shut down for 2 days or more. One example of that is working with Federal Highways Administration to get approval to stockpile material and have it at the known corridor sections that we know are at high risk. We can now be able to stockpile material, which would allow us to move quickly when a washout does occur, which typically has not been very easy because there's a long distance between material locations. Mm-hmm.
Deputy Commissioner, there's a gentleman on this committee, a senator who drives that road. I think he has a question.
You had to know this was coming. So you're talking about large-scale construction projects on the Dalton, and I will never question you when you tell me that you need to replace a bridge. That sounds dangerous. But my question is, what are we talking about in terms of maintenance on the Dalton? Because it's my understanding, with some information I've gotten from your department over the last few months, that we're spending only about $20 million a year to maintain that road, which is a very busy road. Well, busy is it's a very important road, we'll put it that way, for you know, not only for energy for within the state, but also, you know, how we make our money here in the legislature too. So what kind of changes are we looking at in terms of daily maintenance on the Hall Road?
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Anderson through the chair, Senator Myers. Yeah, the $20 million is about right for our standard operating budget. Our folks also use those preventative maintenance funds, and we leverage those as much as we can, which adds on to that. But there's only certain things you can do with federal funds in terms of maintenance. A lot of it's, you know, you put down the calcium with some aggregate. We're hopeful that this idea of stockpiling materials They've been working with us on that, which would allow us, you know, to have that option for maintenance activities. I mean, preventative maintenance is what we would call it. So there's one there. I mean, last year the legislature reduced our operating budgets by about $5.5 million. And so we're constantly, you know, looking around, doing the best we can, you know, with the reductions that have been occurring. So, yeah, we're doing our best there. I think in the governor's fiscal plan, we had the pipeline corridor maintenance fund. That's a real opportunity, I believe, for the Dalton Highway. That would add these funds. Years ago, and I think it was before 2010, there would be a fairly sizable appropriations of state funds for heavy maintenance on the Dalton. And, you know, our teams at that time made the most of those. And you saw some pretty, I think, the projects that, you know, the trucking industry is looking for, just those, you know, rebuilding the road and getting a good surface on it type projects. When we get into the federal projects, you know, the way we look at those is a little different. And so they're bigger projects. And we don't get them done as fast as people are hoping.
Yeah. Follow up, Senator Myers.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind a little latitude. I guess my big question, and I've expressed this to you and some other folks up in the northern region, is just about getting, especially in summertime. I think in the wintertime, you guys generally do a pretty good job, but especially in summertime, getting operators and graders. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand we got to respond to washouts and things like that. Those are important too. But just getting operators and graders out there is a basic function, and I don't think we're doing a very good job of it. How do you feel?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers. Yeah, and if you talk to our teams, what they're going to tell you, because, you know, our budget up there is limited with the, you know, approximately $20 million. They're having to use those preventative maintenance funds to make the year, you know, to get a full year. And so that requires us to move to those types of eligible activities that we can do with those preventative maintenance funds, which aren't the daily grading, you know, those types of activities I think that the trucking industry is looking for. So that's where we've been having a lot of discussions about, you know, if we had this much additional funds, then these are the types of things that we could do. But right now, you know, the current budget only goes so far.
One more, ma'am.
Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you. And if I could just have a smidge of latitude here, just kind of want to paint the picture of the issue that we're dealing with here is trucks are going up that road. Things are getting beat up because of all of the potholes and the washboard and everything that we're dealing with. Freight gets damaged. That means that you're either having to fix it on site or order replacements. That increased costs, it delays projects. It could delay the gas line, you know, as one example. We've both have been dealing with it with Pika and Willow lately, but other stuff too. And then when you're talking about things that are occurring on the oil field, then those become lease expenditures, which then get deducted off of our taxes. Can you trace any, you know, $1 of lease expenditure to what's happened on the Dalton? No, but we know where the mechanism is. And so if we don't provide DOT the money that we need to maintain it, not just these construction projects, but daily maintenance, we're going to be missing out on tax dollars. On the other side of it, the vehicles are getting damaged. Insurance rates go up. Maintenance goes up. Those costs get passed along. Those then become cost overruns for the projects, more potential delays. And just as an example, with the company I've been working with since 2020, our freight rates to haul a load up to Dalton have doubled in 6 years. Some of that is wages and some of that's fuel, but a large portion of that can be traced back to insurance and maintenance costs because of the condition of the road up there. So those are the things that we're dealing with. And, you know, I know that we like to focus on the high dollar, how do we leverage our federal highway money and things like that. But if that's what we focus on and we miss the daily maintenance, we're causing ourselves bigger problems down the line. So I'll get off my soapbox for the moment.
Well, I appreciate that, Senator Myers. You know, I've often said the private sector can't work as efficiently if the public sector is not doing its job. And that's really what you're saying. If we're not maintaining that road, it's costing the private sector, which ripples back to us. Thank you for your comments. Senator Kawasaki, you were next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually looking at an old gas pipeline corridor study that was talked about under the old Gasline Inducement Act in 2008. And it's, I just noticed who had written it. It's actually from Frank Richards. So we were talking about this under AGEA, and we talked about gas pipelines being different than taps. It, because of buried construction, it'd be more earthwork, heavier pipe, greater use of modules, things like that. The question has to deal with the one that Representative or Senator Myers just mentioned about the bad roads equaling slower gas line construction and then increased cost, because that's actually on the slide. But the question has to do with who pays for the maintenance on the road and how is it paid for now? And then I've got a question to follow up for that.
Yeah, that through Chair Geisel, Senator Kawasaki. Yeah, so who pays now? So it's a combination of general funds and federal funds is how we maintain that road right now. And that's pretty, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, in the few, as the pipeline moves forward, yeah, we intend to have discussions with Glenfarne. We can only afford so much on maintenance. Or if you were to go up the Dalton Highway, as Senator Myers knows, our camps, they're not 24-hour camps. I mean, we have limited crews up there. We have a certain amount of equipment. And so if there's a expectation to ramp up by the state, then, yeah, that's something that, you know, we would need additional resource for. Absolutely.
Good. Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the 1980s, FERC ruled that the pipeline traffic of ordinary highway use is not allowable as financial responsibility. So the trucks that go up there for ordinary highway use of pipeline traffic can't penalize. You can't penalize them. So with that said, how is the state going to find a way to recoup the costs in order to help pay for the maintenance of the road and infrastructure now? And this is just the Dalton corridor section, the 415 miles.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that's a great question. You know, when we were working through the Manh Choh ore haul, a few years ago, that was a similar. I mean, that's if industry comes forward with a legal truck, it's not oversized, overweight. You know, we have federal requirements. We put federal dollars into these highways. They absolutely have the right to use that highway, and so we're not. We don't have that ability to per se charge them. So yeah, there's always that restriction. Now, once you get into oversized, overweight vehicles, those are permitted, and so we do charge, you know, for the use of the highway for those vehicles.
So what, I mean,
follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. So I'm trying to figure out how much money you anticipate you're going to need in order for this added pipeline construction. This legislative briefing was published in 08 with the anticipation of six construction seasons needed before gas line construction began. I don't think we're there quite yet, but if Glenfarne wants to put pipe, start building pipe or putting pipe in the ground in December of next year, sounds like we're 6 years behind schedule. And I'm just trying to figure out not just the maintenance cost, but how are you upgrading to the point where Glenfarne feels comfortable moving trucks up and down the Dalton corridor?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. I mean, I think the Dalton Highway right now accommodates an enormous amount of industrial traffic. It has its challenges, there's no doubt. And then, you know, we do our best to address those challenges as they occur. Can the Dalton Highway accommodate, you know, a pipeline construction? There'll be a lot of stress on the Dalton Highway, but it was built for pipeline construction originally. So, yeah, we recognize that as we go forward, you know, we're going to have to get a better understanding of from Glenfarne of what their activities are. We'll be looking at it. You know, when we went through the Manh Choh, you know, we had our engineers looking. Once we received, you know, kind of the design vehicle, understood the loadings and the weights, we reviewed all of our bridges. We had studies on the pavement. We really went through that whole gamut to understand, you know, where the risks were and whatnot. And, you know, that activity is going well. I have confidence in our teams, you know, as we go through there that we're going to do a good job on that.
Again, just to follow up, that it talks about, this is the 2008 study that went out, was that there were 36 projects, including 24 highway projects, 3 airports, 2 bridges, 7 facilities, scheduling between fiscal year 2009 and December 2014, when pipe was supposed to start to happen under the Gasline Inducement Act. The cost was going to be about $1 billion. in construction, averaging $167 million a year for 6 years. We did fund the first $100 million, and that's where some of those fixes were done in 2010 timeframe that I remember on the slope. But you've spent $460 million is what Ms. Little said, but it's and then adding another $450 more. Do you have the money now to be able to do that? And do you have the wherewithal to even get it done before there's pipe in the ground by December of next year, according to Glenn Farn?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. Yeah, what you'll see, I mean, our statewide transportation improvement program, those are the funds. That's the resources we have to do these projects. And, you know, they're all in various stages of project delivery. There's one project, and I do have a slide on projects as we go through the presentation. But, like, for example, there's a project in the Dalton Highway that's called 0 to 9 Mile. It's a full realignment of the highway. You know, it's finally getting close to where we've just got all the permits and authorizations, the right-of-way secured. And so when that's ready, we'll begin. And so, yeah, all these projects won't be done before, I mean, after this aggressive schedule of the pipeline. But we will continue to work through them, you know, as we work through this project, the timeline.
Thank you. You know, I'm looking at this map. I'm going to go to Senator Klayman in a moment, but I'm looking at the map, and the first part of the Dalton up there is listed as green, as in good. It's just interesting, that's all. Senator Klayman.
It's on the same theme. When you say we're getting by, we're maintaining on $20 million a year, and my immediate question when I listened to all these discussions and the increased cost described by Senator Myers and the reality that if we have another construction project, we may be doubling or tripling the volume of vehicles going over and all carrying heavy loads, which translates to more potholes and more damage. And then I hear you say, well, you know, if we pass this fiscal plan, there's going to be this $15 fee that we can use for corridor maintenance. And my reaction is that sounds like you're saying we are already behind the curve on corridor maintenance. We need the money today if we're going to meaningfully have this road in condition to have a major construction project, and waiting to do that until we pass a revenue measure that may or may not make it through the legislature. What I'm hearing from the description and from particularly what Senator Myers describes about the damage to goods that are going down that very road that is designed for pipelines and oil construction, it still sounds like it's not in shape today, and it sounds like we've been underfunding the maintenance for some time. Am I missing something, or?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Klayman. I mean, yeah, it's a challenging. I mean, the 500 miles from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay, it's a challenging stretch to maintain. We're still upgrading stretches, you know, that were still old pipeline alignments, and we're trying to get them up to standards. So the material sources are a big challenge there. You know, we're really excited about the Public Land Order 5150 revocation because that opens up material sources for us. It's been really difficult to work with BLM on that front. The $20 million, we do our best. I mean, getting, you know, the reduction last year, the $5.5 million hurts. Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we're looking everywhere we can so we can, you know, keep the money on the Dalton. And then, you know, when the discussion about the restructure earlier, some of what we're doing is looking through our other positions and, you know, deleting PCNs so that we can have money to put towards those frontline services. I mean, so we're within our agency and whatnot. We're doing our best to accommodate the state's fiscal situation. But yeah, if there was additional funds towards the Dalton, I think we all recognize those could be well utilized right now, for sure.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman?
No, I don't think so. It feels like we're underfunding it.
Yes. Further questions? I just wanted to, it's more of a comment, but looking at the map again, most of the roads here are yellow, and I'm not just focusing on the Dalton. I believe it's the American Society of Civil Engineers that grades roads and states, and I believe we commonly get a D.
Cherokee, so yeah, you're stretching my memory. I thought we got a C last year on pavement. We get Bs on bridges. I mean, we actually get very well complimented on our bridges and our systematic way that we address bridges. But yeah, I didn't think we got a D on pavement, but I would have to go back and look.
Gotcha. But basically what you're saying is underfunding is the issue.
Yeah, Chair Giesel, I mean, if you look, I mean, we meet all our federal performance metrics. And so when you look across the system, that, you know, we're there or above what the federal government says, you know, according to a performance metric. But when you get into the Dalton Highway, what they don't include in that is no one has a national highway system route that's gravel. And so that's not included, you know, so there's some nuances of Alaska that work into this.
Sure, sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's something that this legislature has to take into account as we consider this mega project. We're going to have to maintain some roads to do this. Good. Is there anything else on this particular slide that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith. Chair Giesel, the one item to look at as a takeaway is this QR code that's on the slide. This gives you the opportunity to pull up this map in greater detail. You could navigate it. It is GIS-based. That would allow you to narrow in on some of these sections. For example, the green section of the Dalton being paved and being able to look exactly at where those sections are. And you can correlate that to, we can even overlay it with our proposed project construction plan so we can see where we're addressing some of the poor areas with where projects are coming up. So yeah, please take a look at that. And that's helping to guide our decision-making on our capital program. Because, certainly the 2008 study had a lot of great information into it, but now given 18 years later or so, we can now put that into the dashboard and along with any other development since then for decision-making right now.
Very good. All right, I'll let you move on to the next slide.
Mm-hmm. So on the capital programming, the takeaway here is to be able to communicate a little bit about our resources, what federal funds we have available for capital projects. For the Department of Transportation, we have Federal Highways Administration funds, as well as Federal Aviation Administration funds. And together, while we do have other funding, those do form the backbone of our highways and airport improvements that we can make. Last year, we did have a record-breaking year on a couple fronts. We were able to obligate $922 million of federal highways funds, and part of that includes what we received for additional obligation limitation through federal highways of $183 million. What that means is we're able to spend revenue that we have already attributed to Alaska, but because we had increased authority, we were able to spend those dollars and translate that into construction. $183 million was certainly a record year for us. That also enabled us to put out over $1 billion of contract awards across our highways and airport projects. So for us, having those issued last year carries forward into construction this year as well, to have those contractor payments out and to get these projects going as early as possible in this construction season. We have several tools at our disposal to help us with, to give us some flexibility with how we're programming our funds. One of these tools is called advanced construction, and this is with federal highways funds only. But this allows us to front fund projects on future years' revenue and apportionments coming into the state. If we only receive $800 million, for example, from federal highways, we can actually obligate higher amounts than that. We could obligate $1.5 million. We have to pay that back though in future years, which means in those future years there's less new construction funding. But again, going back to flexibility, as the conversations are held over the statewide transportation improvement program and the projects in there, that's a tool that allows us to move things in earlier as needed to accommodate the priorities across our transportation system. One thing with advanced construction, we have to have that state match to go with it. So any increase in using that advanced construction then goes back to requiring match at that time. It's a you know, with ongoing conversations that you've likely heard about our reduced state match available going into the construction season in fiscal year 26. We're balancing, you know, immediate project needs, project delivery schedules, what's available to go this summer, with also utilizing the tools that we have, which means we can pay back this advanced construction this year without requiring state match. So these are things that we'll be talking about in upcoming weeks as that STIP is out for review. Our aviation program received in Federal Aviation Administration grants approximately $340 million, and those go into airfield projects like terminals at airports, safety improvements, lighting upgrades, and those things. And we have our airport improvement program, which is available online as well, which highlights the projects that we're looking at in the upcoming years.
Pause for a moment. Senator Wilkowski, you had a question. And
yeah, apologize. I had to step out for a minute. And maybe this was answered. I don't know. But are there any bridges along the route that are considered structurally deficient that would need to be upgraded before the construction season began for the project?
Oh, yeah. For the record, Ryan Anderson, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. Yeah, they're actually, I mean, we're constantly looking at our bridges to make sure we're, you know, keeping them in good a state of good repair. For example, this summer we recognized that a bridge along the Parks Highway was coming due, and so we accelerated a project, and you're going to see a bridge replacement project this summer along there. And we do have a list of bridge projects in subsequent slides, so you can kind of see the different ones that we're working on.
Yeah. Good follow-up. Senator Wilkowski. Yeah,
and you'll probably get to it, but do you anticipate that all of those bridges will be completed before this December, which is when Glenn Farn is saying construction will begin?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. Yeah, we went through this on the Manh Choh again, where we had the haul trucks that they were, you know, they met all of our state regulations for hauling. When we do have oversized, overweight vehicles or specific work that's done but for each bridge, if we recognize that a bridge is starting to see some stress, we start monitoring programs. And so we can track things there. If we did get to a situation where we thought a bridge had a structural problem, you know, the first step is we do what's called load posting. And so you start limiting the weight that can go across. So we have measures on how we do that. It's fairly procedural as we go through. So, yeah, we feel comfortable with, you know, the gas line and what our infrastructure can handle. And if something changes, that we have provisions to handle that.
Further questions, Senator Wilkowski? Yeah,
I don't know if this is your lane or not, but do you know if FERC has issued a notice to proceed for construction activities, or is the project currently authorized only for pre-construction work?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'd have to defer to the staff at AGDC for that. That's
right. All right, Senator Dunbar, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to derail the conversation or jump too far ahead, but I guess I'm sort of curious, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, some of what you're describing is sort of more general success and challenges faced by the department. And I think the presentation today is sort of, you know, pretty focused, because we're not the Transportation Committee, on the, you know, the gas pipeline. Mm-hmm. On one of your later slides, you have a description of the Nick Arm crossing. Are you asserting the Nick Arm crossing is part of what we need to construct for the gas pipeline, or does that just sort of happen to be in here because this is a broader presentation?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, what slide are you on?
Slide 10. But again, I don't want to jump ahead. I don't want to disrupt the.
There's a slide later where we talk a little bit more about opportunities that surround the gas line, and so it is a more broader discussion there on that slide as well.
Okay, I think some of my constituents would not describe that bridge as an opportunity at this point. So I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I just as we're going through these slides, I just in the interest of time, I'm hoping we can sort of focus on LNG, the LNG pipeline specifically. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Part of the focus on the gas pipeline is the cost to the state.
Yeah.
What are we going to have to pony up? So moving back to slide five, I'm looking at advanced construction balance, $576 million, and that's great. But that means there has to be a match of, are we talking $57.6 million there from the state of Alaska? And at this point, we have a $70 million match we're trying to make. So there's costs here that we need to be aware of, that we need to make sure that DOT is budgeted for so that these kinds of things can be done, leveraging that federal money.
Yeah, thank you.
Good. All right. Any other questions on five? Slide five. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to add on to that, I guess since I'm not on the Transportation Committee and wasn't on Senate Finance Committee when they talked about this, I just need to hear that the $70 million or whatever the match is not a necessity in an early iteration this year, because or coming into this, we kind of assume that we might have to vote on the first fast track supplemental that we've done in a dozen years. But we're told now, I'm just reading the article from the ADN, that that's not necessary. But I know that my contractors in Fairbanks are saying, we absolutely want the guarantee that it's going to be done. And every pause and every wait until May is damaging to them. So I'm trying to get it straight about what needs to get done in order for those things to happen, for pipeline to construction, for all of these bridges to be done now.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. Yeah. So we absolutely need the match. That there's no question about that. The question has been about the timing of the need. When we were asked about, when does DOT need the match, we have match. There was $30 million that was still appropriated for this year. There was also carryover match. We have carryover match every year. We have enough match to get us through July 1, from when you look at it from a cash flow perspective. That was the question we were asked, and that was why, you saw the supplemental, issued, the not a fast track, but a regular supplemental issued for that match. There's no doubt that the certainty, and we've heard a lot from the contractors, and 100%, I can understand their perspective. They want certainty. We like certainty in our program too. And so that matters. So from that perspective, I can understand their desire, for the expediency. From the numbers perspective and what we were asked, we have enough match to get us through July 1 for an undisrupted project flow.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions on slide 5. All right, let's move on to slide 6.
For the record, Catherine Keith, we have focused a lot on highways and airports, but of course, where freight is going to be coming into the state is going to be at its ports and with heavy utilization of our railroad. With Department of Transportation, we do have by statute that authority and a requirement to coordinate across these modes of transportation. So as highways, rails, ports, marine systems. And so through that, we are in pretty close coordination on several fronts. The Port McKenzie Rail Extension is one example where working with the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and others, we can try to identify some other opportunities to get cargo into the state where otherwise there may be some constraints or restrictions, for example, utilizing only the railroad coming up from Seward, where there may be some bottlenecks and in identifying other port opportunities where that pipe could come in. Opens the door to safer transportation as it goes forward into construction. So the DOT will be engaged in these conversations and trying to find through our resources of funding that we've mentioned in our existing plans, the state transportation, long range transportation plan. We have a freight plan, which is updated regularly through stakeholder input. And we're developing a rail plan as well, updating our rail plan for the state of Alaska. So through these measures, what we are looking to do is not necessarily just construct improvements for the gas line, but ensure that the improvements that we're making also coordinate well and help set us up for investment in the state longer term. So being able to not only benefit just this one project, but looking at other state investments in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. Perhaps you can answer this question. I'm hearing that the Alaska Railroad would need to have rail upgrades to transport these large segments of pipe, that what they have right now is not strong enough, durable enough to handle those heavy loads. Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, Cherokee. So definitely the railroad, of course, is best to answer that. And we happen to have a member of the board here. I'll just say that our focus is on expediency and efficiency. So it's not necessarily that those things would prohibit construction, but in order to be able to move forward at the pace that would be desirable, there certainly could be some infrastructure improvements and alternative transportation corridors and pathways to get material up north. But
thank you for that. We will be inviting the Alaska Railroad to come to the table as well.
Yeah.
You talked about coordination. I thought you might be able to speak to it. Great. Any questions on slide 6? Seeing none, I'll let you move on.
Okay, for the record, Ryan Anderson. This slide really just is dedicated to Fairbanks. And so, you know, there's some people from Fairbanks here. But the gist of it, though, really is, you know, with the railroad terminus in Fairbanks, that is going to be a major logistical point for offloading pipe and moving it the 500 miles, you know, to Prudhoe Bay, unless, you know, some might come in from up north, too. But that this is just, you know, we're really thinking about that with our current, you know, where we have projects right now. What that activity might look like. You know, of course, the Alaska Railroad Yard is a key place in that area where activities happen. You know, we have active projects with the Johansson Expressway, the Steese Expressway right there that we fully expect, you know, that could be a bottleneck. And then as you go north just to get out of Fairbanks, there are some things, you know, kind of going back to the bridge question. There is a bridge that goes over the Chena Hot Springs Road when you exit there that has been, you know, deficient. That we've had to weight restrict it for quite some time. So depending on what you're hauling up north, you may have to go around, you know, through the roundabouts and not use the bridge. We do have a project to upgrade that bridge. We would like to get that out as quickly as we could. It kind of got hung up in some of the MPO discussions when we had the Man Cho. And then also, you know, with the air quality concerns up there were some things we had to get through. But we're moving on that. And then, you know, that is the center of our Northern Region Maintenance and Operations group. And so there'll be a big focus there, you know, for how we maintain things and move things.
I'm having trouble envisioning those long pieces of pipe navigating the roundabout to bypass the bridge. I'm not a truck driver, Senator Myers, but it seems like that'd be a big deal. Did you have a comment?
Just on that note, ma'am, when they put those roundabouts in, they were smart enough to include a bypass, so you can take those 80-footers off and go up without having to go all the way around it.
Gotcha. Are there any questions on slide 7? All right, I'll let you move on.
Okay, and we did do a slide on the Dalton Highway. And just to give you that sense, you know, of the 414 total miles of Dalton Highway and the 250 of gravel. But we do have pavement where we can make pavement work up there. Some places we have pavement and it doesn't work so good up there. So I'll be honest about that. But really it's that that demand for heavy maintenance, this 5150 and the revocation is a big deal. And the quicker that can happen, the sooner we can have access to those gravel resources, the better we can do our jobs. Otherwise, we end up with we can be hauling gravel for 50, 60 miles, and you can only do so much when that's the case. So this is just that summary, I think, of, you know, the Dalton. And you can see this is just all the red and greens and the leaders on here are past and future projects along the Dalton Highway capital projects.
Commissioner, there's a section here where I call it the blob. The earth is moving toward the road. You had to realign the road. Where is that section and how threatening is the blob's advancement to the new section?
Yeah, through the Chair Geisel. I'm trying to remember the milepost. Maybe Senator Myers is probably on the top.
218.
Yeah, thank you. That was something. It was several. So we watched it come towards the road, and we had the university and everybody. They had instrumentation, and we even have. You can go today. You can go online, and you can see what it looks like. It's. I mean, we have the university has cameras and everything out there. It has gone over the old road now. We're monitoring the speeds, you know, and so we'll see. It's a ways away. We moved the road quite a bit. We basically moved the road right down to where the pipeline is. So the next time the blob comes, it's not just going to be DOT. I think Alyeska is going to be pretty concerned too. So, but that's, yeah, we watch those things. There's a lot of folks. There's been a lot of research on that because it is kind of a unique phenomenon for the Arctic. It's kind of this big moving rock and ice mass with trees on it and everything else that comes down.
Thank you. All right, I'll let you move on.
Okay, and I did put up, because the Parks Highway is, you know, will be a primary corridor area from Nanana down south to the Tulitna. We did put a listing of the bridges here that the Tulitna River Bridge is one that we've wanted to replace for some time. I think there's an opportunity here to work with industry because there may be, you know, potential to use that for the pipeline. The Nanana River Bridge at Moody is one, another one where industry has indicated interest in using that for the pipeline. And for those of you that aren't aware, I mean, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is mounted on the Yukon River Bridge. Mm-hmm. The Nanana River Bridge at Rex is one. That's one that we'll be replacing this summer. And then we have that Chena Hot Springs Road undercrossing on there as well. And then you can see the grouping of projects that are currently in our STIP along the Parks Highway, and they're there to address current needs. And so as we go forward, we have always have the options to accelerate these projects because they are in a design phase. We do have engineers working on them. If we had to, you know, they're all scheduled, you know, logically, but if for some reason one section, you know, we wanted to move quicker with another, we just add resources and we work that. So this is something, you know, we're working on. And just other things to think about on the Parks Highway, you know, shared material sources, that will be something, you know, everyone's going to need gravel. This will have access to railroad logistical hubs, and that is something on the question on the railroad. I mean, there are those discussions going about sidings and where you can offload pipe and that whole piece. So we're a part of that. There will be construction within the right of way. For those of you that have been through the near Denali Park and that narrow section, I mean, the pipeline will be installed adjacent to the road. It'll be buried in that narrow section. So there'll be a lot of shared work there. And then, and then of course the oversized overweight permitting on the parks will be essential. The seasonal road restrictions will be an issue. And so we'll be working with industry on how we're going to address that, you know, when you get to those times when the road's pretty soft because we're coming off of winter and things. So yeah, all those things we're trying to really, you know, put the thought into.
Commissioner, all the rehabilitation and reconstruction, is that in your budget request now?
Yeah, through the chair, Chair Geisel. These are all in our statewide transportation improvement program. Okay. So that's a 4-year plan. And so it wouldn't be in the, like this year's budget, but they are programmed, you know, in our federal program. What will happen is the design, potentially the right-of-way, the utilities phases may be in the budget because we're doing the preliminary work and that is in the budget. But the actual construction would be whatever year it is in the statewide transportation improvement program.
Thank you. Other questions? Seeing none. So that takes us to slide 10, I think.
Okay. And so, yeah, on this slide, we've been doing a lot of work because we recognize that Point McKenzie, Port McKenzie, you know, could have real value to a pipeline construction scenario. When you look at where the pipeline has to go, having all that pipe go through Anchorage has its disadvantages. We've been looking hard at, okay, well, what would it take, you know, to get the Point McKenzie, the Port McKenzie, the rail extension going? We have engaged with a company called Macquarie and Martinus, which is Macquarie's on the financial side, Martinus is on the rail building side, to get some preliminary work done to look at financial models, as well as reach out to industry, because it's more than just the gas line that could benefit from an industrial port concept at Point McKenzie. So they're doing that work now. And so we'll see, you know, what comes of that. But, you know, the railroad extension, of course, is the embankment that was built quite some time ago with state funds. And so I think the state has several $100 million invested already. And so the idea is, you know, what's the best way to complete that? Also on here, you'll see the West of Sitna Access Road. That's the road that goes out to the west from the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. And the key piece there is you'll see where the AKLNG route is. It's that red line on the left coming down. And it is on the west side of the West of Sitna River. And so having a road access there does have some very big benefits to pipeline construction. So, you know, the state is actively working on that project. The DOT is for the first 20 miles that gets us across the West of Sitna River. And then that was the next section was where you hear about the ADA project picking up and going on. But this section would be a public road. And then, of course, yeah, we did have the discussion on the Kinnick Arm crossing. And, you know, that is something, you know, the Mat-Su has been very vocal about that continued, you know, push to understand that project. One thing we recognized over the past few years was that tunneling technology has changed significantly. And so we've been working with doing some feasibility technical engineering work on the feasibility of a tunnel under Kinnick Arm. And so that work will become public very soon. And so that's been something. And so, you know, we understand, you know, when Kinnick Arm crossing, there was a lot of controversy surrounding Government Hill, the belugas. Some of these things we feel, you know, could be mitigated by a tunnel if you didn't have to go through Government Hill and you went under Kinnick Arm. And so, yeah, so we've got that work. We've been reaching out to companies like the Boring Company, and they've been interested. They've shown some interest, you know, but it's just, you know, real preliminary, just kind of discussions. But those types of things, you know, as we look across what's possible over there, get pretty interesting. The other piece is this idea of a sustainable aviation fuel development. You know, if you look at the Anchorage International Airport, we're doing over 900 million gallons of Jet A into those 747s and 777s every year. And, you know, industry came forward and said, hey, sustainable aviation fuel for, you know, the benefits of the reduced carbon is of very much interest to us. And we got letters of interest for about 300 million gallons annually is where they're saying. And so Deputy Commissioner Keith has been doing a lot of feasibility work about, you know, this fuel is created from different feedstocks. It can be woody biomass, it can be fish waste, different things there. And so, you know, we've been in the background doing a lot of technical work on that front as well.
Very interesting. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So your earlier slide sort of stressed the importance of the Dalton, and it sort of had a realization, basically. So here you have construction happening by West Sioux. But a lot of the construction will sort of start at the North Slope and move down, right? I mean, I imagine there'll be construction from in the other direction as well, but materials have to go all the way to the top or near, and they'll sort of start to come down. And so it enters the state. And my question is about the port of entry. So if it's going on the railroad, does it start in – so here you have us extending the railroad to Point McKenzie, but let's assume that doesn't happen or Point McKenzie is unable to take these things in time. Does it come in through the Port of Alaska at Anchorage, or does it come in through Seward? And I have a follow-up to that, Madam
yes.
Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Yeah, I couldn't speak definitively on that of where Glenfarne, where the logistical plans would, you know, bring the pipe in. Of course, Seward has a freight dock that could be a port of entry. We don't believe Whittier. Whittier is deep water, but we don't believe they have the space there. And then the Port of Alaska, of course, is a primary point of entry for Alaska.
So follow up,
Chair. Senator Dunbar.
Well, I appreciate that the Port of Alaska is here, but it's sort of not listed as one of your bullet points. The Port of Alaska has critical repair and maintenance needs. Could the repair of the Port of Alaska be necessary if we want the AKLNG project to go forward? Or could it be part of, you know, could we see the PAMP, as some call it, as part also of our infrastructure investment to accelerate the natural gas pipeline?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. That's a really good point. And yeah, Port of Alaska should be on here as a key strategic asset. There's no doubt. I mean, that's where 60% of our jet fuel for Anchorage International Airport comes in through the Port of Alaska. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's critical needs there that need to be accommodated. We have been talking to the Port of Alaska as well. So yeah, I should add that to this slide. Absolutely.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar?
Just very briefly, I appreciate that, Commissioner. And I would be interested in a future presentation about what, if any, changes might be needed at the Port of Alaska to accommodate a project of this scale. Or is it simply they can continue on with their current modernization project, but we at the state need to continue to inject capital into that project as we have in the past because it is such a crucial piece of our infrastructure? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Rocher, questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. So I was wondering, you mentioned earlier the 20 miles out the west to there to the bridge. So my understanding is underway, and is there a completion date?
Yeah, through the Chair, Senator Rocher. Yeah, we've been working very hard on the environmental assessment, the permitting. So we actually have a partnership with the Kinnick tribe who support the project to move this thing, you know, through all the steps as we go. So yeah, we're in that full project development stage on that right now. We would love to be in construction for a first phase just to get a pioneer road in this fall. And so we're still working towards that. And then of course, as we work out towards the bigger bridge, I think right now we're projecting there's 6 bridges along this route. Several of them are more like single span bridges. But the West Ascitna, of course, is the one that's, I think it's about 2,000 feet in length. And so that would be more in the 2027, you know, 2028 construction.
Right now. All right. Thank you very much.
Senator Myers.
Well, thank you. So I'll take a little heat off of the Point Mac versus Anchorage debate here. we've had... you know, on your larger slide there, you pointed out Valdez, and probably not as critical this time around as compared to TAPS, but still a major port, still bringing a lot of freight that's either too large or too dangerous to bring through Anchorage. And I'm curious how that fits into your thinking.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers. Yeah, Valdez absolutely is important. I mean, I know we've done a lot of work on the Richardson south of Glen Allen. That stretch through from Glen Allen north to Delta Junction, we have some pretty big projects scheduled, some this summer. And then, of course, you know, we've upgraded the Richardson between Delta Junction and Fairbanks with the passing lanes and whatnot. So we're feeling good about that piece of it. There's still some bridges there, too, as well, you know, that we've got to address that are in our STIP. So we've got to make sure that's covered. We do recognize, I mean, there are times when some of these big loads that are coming up, we can't get across the Chilitna Bridge. And so we have to go on the Glen and up the Richardson and over to Fairbanks because that of the restrictions for certain large loads on that bridge as well. So, yeah, we have to care for that. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. I see no more questions. I'll let you move on to the next slide. I think it's 11.
For the record, Catherine Keith, one key project that will be critical for the natural gas liquefaction facility is in Nikiski with the Kenai Spur Highway reroute. This has been in discussion for several years. This is a project that's being led by AGDC, the design of this reroute. So the slide shows briefly where this reroute would go. It'd be approximately 3.9 miles. It would be designed up to modern standards for the two-lane highway, allowing for traveling of both public and any heavy trucks. So this allows the contiguous footprint of the liquefaction facility so that the public during construction or other times do not have to go through or near that construction. So this is an important safety improvement that we're working on. The estimated cost is $30 to $40 million.
Thank you. I see no questions. If you're ready to move.
And I had touched briefly on aviation earlier, but what I didn't comment on was just where those airports are and how critical they will be for construction of the gas line. There's several airports that are along the Hull Road that are owned and maintained by DOT, not all of them. What we've been doing is looking at these airports for any upgrades that they may need to the runway surfacing and anything with their lighting that could be done, so that as we have increased amount of construction staff and drivers along the way, that we have the airports in good shape, whether it's for medevacs or for bringing in supplies for man camps and other things. The airports that we would expect significant increased use would be up in Dead Horse. It's a 6,500-foot runway. It allows for the larger aircraft needed to bring in major supplies. And further south there, at the Anchorage International Airport and Fairbanks International Airports, both of these, with the increased amount of activity in Alaska, would naturally see increased use. And then further south, we have the Kenai Airport, which will also have additional activity. So for us in our airport improvement program, we're taking these into consideration so that we can plan for that increased use and shore up, make the resiliency of the airports as solid as we can. Of course, in our more rural airports, off the road system, you know, we are challenged certainly with weather reporting. That is a challenge that all of our airports face. And here we're paying attention to these things. Our weather reporting stations are not within the department's oversight, but we do collaborate with National Weather Service and FAA on these reporting stations to try to support the improved operation of them to help them be as reliable as possible.
So a question on the Hull Road airports. These are all short runway gravel surface. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct.
But they could accommodate a Lear, for example, a medevacing aircraft.
Hmm. Yeah. Commissioner, you have the links.
For the record, Ryan Anderson. Yeah, Commissioner Giesel, typically you have to have special equipment to land a jet on gravel. So that's typically, you'll see more like the King Airs that are doing the medevacs up there. A lot of these airports were built for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. And then they've been upgraded over time. So they're definitely capable of the large heavy haul aircraft, Hercules, C-130s, those type. Mm-hmm.
Good. When we have a mega project, injuries happen. I was an RN during TAPS. We had a lot of clients, a lot of patients in the hospital. Further questions on this slide? All right, seeing none. Thank you.
Regarding, there's other things besides infrastructure improvements, as I mentioned, that we need to do. Emergency response management is a very important one. A tool that we have is our programmatic agreement that we've been in discussion with Glenfarne. And what that does is pre-negotiate, in a sense, terms, how we're going to work together to ensure the safety of those corridors. And, emergency response is a good example of that. Who's responsible for what? How often are we going to have medevac sites available? And how are we going to work through permitting? We can have some of the agreements predetermined through one common operating agreement, and then we can modify that as we move forward and we learn more specifics about the constructability plan for the gas line. We have mentioned the Alaska 511, where we have a freight mode, which helps drivers be able to see any things of concern along the route and can help with reroutes, areas where there's pullouts or bypasses. We have bridge heights in there as well to help reduce the risk of bridge strikes, which has been a known issue in the state as well.
All right. I'll let you move on. I don't see any questions.
Okay, and for the record, Ryan Anderson. Yeah, the other piece of this, the highway permitting and compliance is a big piece of this. We have a strong team that works this right now. And, you know, technology is our friend on this. We're really hoping that, you know, with some of these more mobile type monitoring stations, you know, that we can allow trucks to move through without having to do quite so many checks. Some of the things we look at is if you're a truck driver and you have a good record, there's advantages to that in terms of, you know, how you're inspected, at what frequency, and whatnot. So good, there's some good strategies there just to make sure that, you know, on the trucking side, recognizing additional activity, limited resources, where we're still caring for, you know, the laws and regulations that we abide by.
Very good. I'll let you move on.
Okay. And then really, as we get to the end here, workforce is absolutely high on our list. You know, there's a lot of good concerns about, you know, these pipeline jobs come in and what happens to all of our folks that are maintaining our highways, airports, you know, across the board. So the types of things, you know, we're doing a lot with workforce right now in terms of training opportunities. We have scholarship programs to get young people in to get CDLs and then work for the state. You know, we're doing more and more with contracting. You'll see even with our snow removal now, when we get events, you'll see contractors out doing snow removal. So we're trying to really make sure that, you know, we can scale up as we need to. And then if we do get into a situation where, you know, we're going to be struggling maintaining our workforce, that, you know, we have that knowledge and that ability to quickly, you know, do some things like contracting or whatnot. There's been other discussions too about incentives and those types of things, but that's pretty early for us. So we'll be continuing to work through that to make sure that, you know, we can maintain our roads and highways and airports. Occurs.
Senator Rocher, question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, when you talk about bridges being rebuilt along the way on the Parks Highway, I was just wondering if it went by rail, you wouldn't have to worry about any kind of traffic all the way to Fairbanks.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Rauscher. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we're big advocates for the rail. It takes a lot of pressure off our highway system. But, you know, those stretches of the Parks Highway, there's still going to be active construction. And so there will be pipe unloaded and then moved on the highway to its construction location. So there'll still be a fair amount of activity.
But through,
yes,
but it would limit it greatly and take the strain off, wouldn't it?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you for it.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, the chair pointed this out earlier with her experience while TAPS was being built. So we've gone through this before, something like this. Granted, we were a very different state, but what did the state do while TAPS was being built and those kind of jobs? It must have a similar pressure on our state employees that we're maintaining, you know, our roads and highways and maintainers. What did the state do? Do we know? What did the state do back then to tackle this challenge?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And maybe that's something we could do a little more work on. I mean, I have a lot of anecdotal stories, you know, people that stuck around and people that didn't, and you know, those types of things. Yeah, that's, you know, in some respects, it was different times. You know, I think the expectation right now for road maintenance, you know, when there's snowstorms and things, is a lot higher than it used to be. I mean, there's so much information available. But yeah, it's a good question. It's something we could do a little more work on for sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I share that concern, Senator Dunbar. I think the wages that will be offered on the pipeline work will be far higher than what the state is offering. So that will be a challenge, keeping our workforce in place. All right. I see no further questions. You can move on.
And Chair, this is just a quick slide. You know, just the importance of our capital budget, the importance of our operating budget. You know, we're working through the AL360 regulatory reform. That's going to be really important just to, you know, when these, you know, as a pipeline comes to fruition, our ability to be responsive and have, I mean, having our infrastructure in good shape as we start, you know, is really important. You know, we're pretty proud of our infrastructure in Alaska. I mean, there's a lot of talented engineers, you know, across the state, both working for the state and for contractors. They're really, you know, we've built a pretty robust system here. So yeah, recognizing there'll be some stress there, but we're, you know, we feel like, you know, we're up for the challenge. So thank you.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think one thing that should be on here that isn't is the STIP itself. one of the things I think that we've highlighted in this presentation here is the role that the STIP plays in our infrastructure, and sometimes the role that STIP doesn't play but should. You know, I hammered on this a little bit when we were talking about the Dalton Highway. You know, we have all these projects set up for the Dalton, but not necessarily the maintenance money to set, you know, either to maintain what we've already got or to maintain after those projects have gone through. And, you know, it's been, call this my own personal opinion here. You know, I think that in some ways we're better off on the Dalton Highway taking some of the money out of some of those projects and putting it into the maintenance. Senator Kawasaki brought up the 2008 study on some of the things that need done, that need built, and, you know, in order to support a gas line or something similar, and that have not gotten done already. And this isn't a money issue. You know, we're talking 2008 to 2014, back when, well, we were rolling in the dough in a lot of ways. So this tells me it's a programmatic problem. And so I get concerned. Nothing against Commissioner Anderson or anything you've done since in your time there, but I get concerned that we have fallen into a pattern in this state of when we use our STIP or other programmatic things like it, that we have taken away the focus on what does our construction do to benefit our economy in the long run, and focused it much more on how do we maintain jobs in the construction industry for a year or two. So, and now we're seeing the end result of that. We knew, now I understand the pipeline route has changed somewhat because it, you know, it wasn't until, what, 2013, 2014, we made the decision that it was going to go to Nikiski. But, you know, so that may have changed some things. But we knew in 2008 that we needed to get some of this stuff done, and we did not do it. And our STIP did not reflect that. So it's a large-scale concern that I've had for a while. And I think it's time for us within the legislature, within the executive branch, both to recognize that, you know, it's not just about let's maintain our construction jobs for a summer or two. It's about what's going to benefit us 10 or 20 years down the line. And I'm worried that we're not doing that. So thank you.
So, Commissioner, we've understood that that Glen Farn is sort of counting on, in a way, or it's an option, that the Department of Energy is going to fund a major portion of this work. Has DOT put together a budget for the next 5 years during which this construction will take place as far as what your needs will be financially?
Yeah, Chair Geisel. I mean, I think what you'll see in our upcoming STIP, which is a four-year plan, will be, you know, how we're planning with the capital resources that we have available for that next 4 years. And that will include a focus on AKLNG. And what you're going to see is a very similar what you saw today in terms of the projects and what's not. When it comes to maintenance, I mean, I think what the governor had with the pipeline corridor maintenance fund, I mean, that's a nice addition that helps us in a lot of areas, you know, for the maintenance piece of it. And so that gets at our operating costs. We're pretty frontline can-do operation. And so we're pretty focused on the here and now and recognizing, you know, some of our experiences with some of the other industrial, you know, activities that have gone on. Have we put together a five-year plan for, you know, the entirety? I think you're going to see DOT come out with more once we get that information from Glen Farn about the types of trucks, the weights, you know, really those activities along our highway. Then we can assess more on if there's any weaknesses in our infrastructure that we need to address or those types of things.
So basically you're on hold until the plan is rolled out to see what you'll be needing to do. In terms of, because it seems to me you're going to be asking for a pretty large budget. Yeah. There's a lot of work here that you've described.
Yeah, Chergi, so the things that you're seeing right now, you know, we will be addressing in our STIP.
Okay.
So that will be there. But yeah, as we get more information on the logistical plans of Glen Farn, we'll definitely be taking hard looks at those. Absolutely.
Good. Any other questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at page 8 on the, maybe to answer some of the question, it talks about the investment in corridor resilience. the planned amount at between 2026 and 2031 at about $1.455 billion. Is that's in? I'm trying to figure out what corridor resilience means. Is that just to get to a standard that would be anticipated for pipeline construction or to maintain?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. Yeah, which is the numbers you see there. So the plan is, you know, that's what's in our STIP. It's based on where we know the road needs work. It needs upgrades. It could be because maybe the curves don't meet standards. It could be because we have a bridge that we recognize it's coming due. Lots of different reasons there. But yeah, what you would see in the next, you know, from 2026 to 2031 right now is planned and estimated is $454 million invested into reconstruction projects.
Follow up, Senator Kosaki.
Yeah, just to follow up again, I taking back this 2008 briefing entitled Infrastructure Improvements Needed to Support Gas Pipeline Construction, and then seeing where we're at today, I'm just trying to figure out how the timelines will sync. I think, you know, we're all super excited about hearing Glen Farne ready to put pipe into the ground in December of next year. And I'm not convinced hearing the report today that the roads will even be in a condition for that to happen. And so I'm trying to get you to make a pitch for, yeah, we'll be done. We'll be ready to go if necessary. That on day one in December of 2026.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, one thing that might be helpful is we could go through that 2008 list and we could identify the projects that were completed and then any that may not have been. Because I'm familiar with the list. I don't have it on the top of my head, but I thought the last time I looked at it, we had done a significant amount of work off that list. You know, one thing with DOT that I love about working and being in this role and why I took this role, I mean, you just have a group of phenomenal people. And I mean, I'm just going to use Typhoon Heilong and the West Coast storm as an example. The devastation out there and what happened and what occurred and the way we were able to resource that with, we had folks from Nome, Fairbanks, Juneau, all Southeast Alaska, Anchorage, you know, all of those. Deputy Commissioner Keith is leading that effort. You know, we're out there actively rebuilding boardwalks and the roads. And I mean, we're delving into, we had delved into housing and school repairs. I mean, we are a contracting agency. We get out on a response. We have contractors. Contractors are our partners, and we're working through these things. I mean, I think you're going to get that same response on the gas line. I mean, everybody's in this together. And with our infrastructure, you know, when we start seeing weakness, you know, we have ways that we work through that. I'm confident we're ready for the gas line. I mean, I think you're going to see us really putting our heads to it once we get more details here. And we're going to be upfront and transparent, you know, about what's happening out there with everybody. So, yeah, no, I'm feeling good about it. I think, you know, we're going to, as we learn more and you know, recognizing the type of event this is, kind of going back to the beginning, you know, where we had the gold rush, World War II, TAPS. I mean, I believe this is going to be an event, you know, like that. And we did those. And so, you know, I'm excited about what's coming up in the future for transportation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. I see no further questions. Commissioner Anderson, Deputy Commissioner Keith, thank you very much. Very helpful presentation. I think the committee learned a lot and enjoyed the presentation. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We had another issue on our agenda, which I'm setting aside. So this will conclude our meeting. Our next meeting will be on Friday, January 30th at 3:30. I know that's late in the afternoon on the last day of the week, but you'll make it. The presentation should be super interesting. It'll be the Department of Natural Resources talking about North Slope Gas and the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission opining on what amounts of gas are legitimately removed from the North Slope or Point Thompson. So at this time, this meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:58 p.m.